Ashcroft, Mr. Mwangi.
May it please the court, I'm Godfrey Mwangi, representing Ms. Noureen Niam, the petitioner. We are petitioning the court to reverse the Board of Immigration Appeals decision, which affirmed the order of the immigration judge denying Mr. Niam relief. The board affirms the immigration judge's decision, which makes essentially four determinations, and the board holds that the immigration judge's finding that my client was persecuted under the regime of Mr. Numeri was harmless, although the immigration judge found that my client's persecution occurred under a different regime, that there has since been a change in government, elections, and another change in government, which seems to contradict the board's conclusion that that error was harmless. Further, the Board of Immigration Appeals also did not address the other errors that were pointed out on appeal, which we believe were important for the board to address. Namely, the immigration judge concluded that there were no recriminations against Mr. Niam on his attempted return to Sudan, which he aborted before he actually entered Sudan, when he realized that the joint Chadian-Sudan Border Patrol had the document that he had obtained in Chad before he entered, and he asked the driver who was attempting to get him into Sudan to let him off the vehicle, and he did not enter Sudan at that point. And the third issue that the immigration judge raised, which we believe was also important for the board to address, was the judge's conclusion that Mr. Niam had conceded that the government of Sudan was not interested in him, which in fact, if you review the record, the administrative record at page 110, is a misinterpretation of Mr. Niam's testimony, which is actually that the government would not have been interested in him had he not been a supporter of the UMA party, which is a party whose supporters the government had been persecuting. The fourth issue that we believe the immigration judge erred on is the conclusion that there was no evidence that members of Mr. Niam's party who remained in Sudan, namely his mother and sister, had been harmed. Again, we believe the board should have addressed that issue because Mr. Niam was persecuted because of his connections to the UMA party of Sudan, and there's no evidence that his mother or sister were ever connected to that party. And this is why we believe the board should have addressed those issues. The respondents argue in their brief that we have not shown that Mr. Niam merits the relief that he seeks because he did not meet his burden. However, Mr. Niam has shown that he was targeted, that he was arrested, he was detained, he was persecuted, and we do not believe that a reasonable adjudicator can interpret the harm he suffered as anything but persecution. That happened in the past. There hasn't been any meaningful change in Sudan since he was persecuted in that country, and that past persecution entitles him to a presumption of a well-founded fear of persecution, which has not been rebutted, because this court has held in Vujicic versus INS that a mere statement that there has been a change of government is insufficient to rebut the presumption. And the immigration judge merely said the government has changed in Sudan, therefore you don't face persecution in that country. And the burden was the government's to prove that the change is meaningful with respect to Ms. Sania, and we do not believe that this record establishes that the government did shoulder that burden in this particular case. And we do request that the court reverse the board's decision.
Now, one of the things that you talk about is this alleged factual error in the analysis when the IJ confused Niam's arrest by the Bashar regime with an earlier arrest under a different regime. What impact do you think that had, and why is that significant?
Judge Williams, we believe that it is significant because there are two arrests in the record. There was an arrest that occurred in 1983 under the Numeri regime. That is in the record, and it occurred, and that regime was toppled in 1985. There's another arrest under the Bashir regime in 1990, and the Bashir regime continues to the present day. So the judge argues there has been a change, but there has not been a change because that regime still controls the Sudan to the present day. Therefore, the argument that you don't face persecution in that country is belied by the continuing control of government in the country in which the IJ argues there has been a change in government.
Did you argue the issue of the torture convention before the BIA?
I believe, and Your Honor, Judge Ripple, I was not counsel before the BIA.
Oh, sorry, did counsel?
Counsel did argue that issue before the BIA. I believe the record establishes that, Judge Ripple.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mwangi. Mr. Wilson?
May it please the court, my name is Earl Wilson on behalf of Respondent Attorney General John Ashcroft. There's ample evidence in this record, Your Honor, to support the board's findings in this case. There are actually two findings, and as we point out in our brief, the first finding relates to asylum, and the finding there is the petitioner failed to file his asylum application within 1 year, and as a result of that, he's ineligible for asylum. Petitioner has not contested that finding, and he's therefore waived that issue. That's important in the context of this case, because the relief that's left is withholding of removal and torture convention. And that's significant because it's a much higher burden to establish relief under the withholding regs and also under the torture convention regs. What petitioner would have to show is that there's a clear probability that he's going to be persecuted, and or there's a likelihood that he's going to be tortured. Now compare that to a well-founded fear of persecution that he would have to establish for asylum. So he starts this game in somewhat of a hole, and the immigration judge and the board points that out. On appeal to this court...
The immigration judge made a terrible mistake regarding who is governing the Sudan. So doesn't that really vitiate the immigration judge's opinion?
No, Your Honor. If you look at the immigration judge's decision, he sets forth the factual details accurately. What happens is as he gets the analysis...
No, that's the fact. Mm-hmm. Who's running the Sudan? He certainly didn't get that right.
Right, but I think, you know, my point is, Your Honor, as he sets forth much of the... with respect to the first arrest, and he summarizes respondent's claim... it is accurate. He says that the respondent stated this on page 2 of the immigration judge's decision. I'm not quite sure. I'm looking at the respondent's brief. It says, respondent stated that in 1983, his organization participated in the first anti-government demonstration against the Namari regime, and that he was arrested and detained for 2 days, during which he was beaten. That's in the factual section. And what happens is, once he gets later on into the decision, he makes the mistake. And but the important thing is the board addresses that issue. And it's really a harmless error, because there are really only two alleged detention and arrests in this case. And with respect to the first one, the court says it's in the board says it's in the immigration judge says it's in 1990. If it should have been 1983, the point is it happened so long ago. And so if the actual date should have been 1983, it actually works against petitioner in this case. And but really it's a harmless error, whether it's 1983 or 1990. I'd also like to point this out to the court. In petitioner's asylum application, he doesn't claim that his problems, his fear of returning to the Sudan, relates to the 1983 arrest. He says it relates to the present regime. So what you have here is an old regime that's toppled, a regime that takes over in 1990, and petitioner in his asylum application says, I fear return because of the circumstances relating to the new regime. But what the immigration judge does is he goes through each one of the alleged arrests, and he explains why that evidence does not establish that there's a clear likelihood of persecution. Frankly, the immigration judge did more than he really needed to in this case, given the testimony, given the allegations that the petitioner made in this case. It also makes sense. This is the first regime ended by everybody's account. And in 1990, there was a transition government, and there's a new government. In fact, after the 1983 transition, petitioner gets a job with a subsequent administration. And so whatever happened back in 1983 is really not very relevant for the purposes of his claim. But the immigration judge nonetheless considers it, and he states it correctly in the factual section, but he makes a misstatement when he gets to the analysis. The board looks at that, and on appeal here, we look at the board's decision. The board considered the impact of the error. And the board looked at the record as petitioner urges that it should be looked at. It says, first of all, the error is harmless, and then it looks at it considers the correct date, and it says
anything about the other evidence. The board didn't say anything about the other evidence.
It didn't specifically, Your Honor. But it, with respect to the alleged error, the board said, I looked at it, and it looked at it, and it found it harmless. Now, the presumption is the board looked at all the evidence in the record, and it specifically addressed the claim the petitioner is making before this court, which is, you've got the dates wrong. And the board looked at that and said, that's harmless. Your Honor, when you look at this record as a whole, I don't think petitioner made his case before the immigration judge or the board. But more importantly, for the purposes of this appeal, he simply cannot show that the record compels the conclusion that he established eligibility for relief given this high burden of proof. There's simply enough, there's substantial evidence to support the board's decision, and that pretty much ends the inquiry with respect to whether there is compelling evidence. There is cited record evidence in this case, and petitioner simply cannot show that on appeal, given the very high level of relief that he's seeking, and the even higher standard that he must overcome to have the discipline.
What did the immigration judge mean by this reference to no recriminations? What on earth does that mean?
I think what happens, if the story is that
it's really not the right word.
It probably is not. It probably meant to say that nothing happened to him when he tried to re-enter the country. He says that he's in the presence of Sudanese and Chad security forces. He tells them, I'm a man that you may be concerned about, and nobody does anything to him. And now he's saying that if you send me back to Chad, these same people, security forces, are going to do something to me.
Well, wait, the border people wouldn't let him in, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the way the testimony is that he is in the possession of security forces, Chadian and Sudanese Chadian forces, and they're taking him somewhere else where he was going to meet people who he apparently issued payroll checks to. But he's clearly in the possession of security forces at this point. And he's going with them in his car. He has given them his passport, which he obtained to leave the country. So he's got the passport. He's in their possession. And he says, listen, forget it. I'm going to go back. And apparently he's about a mile and a half away from the very security.
So you're saying that because he was in Chad when he left?
So
you're saying that because the Sudanese did not kidnap him in a foreign country, there were no recriminations?
No, he was in the Sudan. He came to the border to return to Sudan.
Right.
He submits himself to Sudanese and Chadian forces on his way to a further interior checkpoint, which is a city that he says is directly in Sudan. About a mile and a half, he stops and says, listen, I changed my mind because the people who you're going to take me to, I've actually issued their checks, and I'm worried that they're going to recognize my name and they're going to do something to me. But the point that the immigration judge is making is that here he is in the possession of Sudanese authorities, and they did nothing to him back in 1991.
Well, the authorities are some border cops, right? I mean, they're...
Correct, Your Honor.
And then when you look at it in the context of the most recent State Department report, even though there have been some improvements, the human rights record remained extremely poor, and there's an outline of all the problems that continue there. So given what his prior situation was and the fact that he's under the same administration, that's a problem for you, isn't it?
No, Your Honor. There's absolutely... What, if you look at the present administration, what happened is in 1991, I think it's... There's a new administration. He is removed because he's part of the old administration. And he then tries to come back into the country. The new administration, presumably in charge of the security forces, they do nothing to him. Subsequent to that, he says he is in Nigeria, and he hears that Sudanese authorities are looking for him and three others. Now, the three others are not politically active individuals, which, you know, begs the question, such he's not politically active in this country. There's absolutely no evidence to show, again, under the very high standard, that there's a clear likelihood that the petitioner in this case is going to be persecuted or that he's going to be tortured. There certainly is not, arguably there's hardly a compelling evidence that he was even persecuted and tortured in the past. Admittedly, there was a transition where he was detained for a period of, I think, 3 weeks, but even under this court's precedent, that hardly would qualify as persecution. And then again, the issue becomes persecution on account of what? There was a transition government.
There's another odd non sequitur in the IJ's opinion. He says on page 9, even if it were established that the government persecutes all opposition party members, respondent admitted that he's not been active in the UMA party since his arrival in the United States. That's completely illogical. If the government public persecutes all opposition party members, it doesn't matter whether you're active or not. Because if it doesn't persecute the ones who are inactive, then it would mean it persecutes some opposition party members.
I think he's probably talking about active, politically active, Your Honor, but I would just be speculating at this point here. But I think when you read it in context, that's what he's talking about. What he's saying is this guy is not a
political... How does he know whether being active in the United States is relevant to what happens if you go back to the Sudan?
I can't answer that question.
Also, he apparently went back to the Sudan when he chickened out at the last minute to be a spy for the UMA party. Well, when the Sudanese find out about that, they're not going to think kindly about him. They're going to wonder why he's going back, whether he's going to be a spy for the UMA party.
I think the way to look at it, John, is that when he went back to be the so-called spy, nothing happened to him.
He was going back as a spy, obviously. I mean, don't be ridiculous.
Well, no, Your Honor.
Don't come in and say, oh, I'm coming in here. I'm coming back to Sudan because I've been asked to spy on you.
I'm not sure how the Sudanese will now know that he's going back to be a spy.
We've just been talking about it.
I guess, I'm not sure that that means that the Sudanese will know that, Your Honor. But that's not, I can't defend sort of that speculation. What I am saying, Your Honor, is that he did not meet his burden of showing, based on the evidence here, that there's a clear probability that he is going to be persecuted or that he has a well-founded fear of being persecuted. And he cannot show, based on this record, that there's no evidence to support the board's decision. The one issue with respect to the incorrect date, if anything works in the favor of the government...
No, no, that's not the one issue.
No, I'm saying, I'm not saying that's the only issue. I'm saying correctness, that works for the government, so it doesn't help them in any way. So clearly it's a harmless error. When this record is looked at...
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. Your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Womongi, how much time do you have? You haven't got much. Okay, well, thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument, United States v.